Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. Coming up, Bridging the Divide in Moorhead. You'll also hear more about what Stephen John was just talking about in the newscast there, about the talks there at the state capitol this hour over some of the funding for the legislature. And a reminder, at 1:30 this afternoon, we will bring you live special coverage of Attorney General Jeff Sessions testifying at a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing. That is 1:30 this afternoon live on NPR News. First, though, this hour, we're going to answer your questions about net neutrality. There's a lot of attention in Washington and Minnesota on other topics, so we thought we'd take some time today to jump into this one. The open internet and what changes might come from the Federal Communications Commission in a Trump administration, that work is already underway, so what would happen? And what questions do you have about it? 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. And please don't call or text if you're driving. Brian Fung is a technology reporter for The Washington Post. It's good to have you back on the show, Brian. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to come back to the basics of what net neutrality is in a moment, but I want to start big picture here. Is this a story about the way we access and use the internet and whether it's actually going to fundamentally change in coming years?
Well, absolutely. In order to understand what's really going on here, you kind of have to start by talking about how internet providers' business models have completely changed in recent years. Essentially, what we're seeing is the convergence of all types of media, whether that's video or audio or text, onto the internet. And, you know, this is forcing a lot of companies like Comcast and AT&T to bump up against companies like Google and Facebook. And now, increasingly, companies like Comcast and AT&T are buying up content companies so that they can provide access to exclusive TV shows or other types of internet content. And the goal there is to sell advertising and become, in some ways, like Google or Facebook. And so this is causing a lot of friction between internet providers and websites. And the big question here is, because internet providers control how Americans get onto the internet, could internet providers somehow manipulate the web to favor their own services or favor services that are allied with them?
So use today's news as an example. There's this merger here, this acquisition, Verizon buying Yahoo. And the news today is that the CEO of Yahoo, Marissa Mayer, has resigned because there's this $4.5 billion acquisition. Play that story that's just happening today into what you just said. How does that play out?
Sure. So the reason why Verizon is buying Yahoo, a company that many people may not really use anymore, but it's actually an enormous website. It's actually the third biggest destination for web users after Google and Facebook, if you could believe it. Yahoo is an enormous online property, and Verizon hopes to use it to sell advertising to all those people who still go to Yahoo and use its services like Tumblr or Flickr or Yahoo Sports. And so, with Yahoo being sold now to Verizon, Verizon can use its ownership over Yahoo to not only sell advertisements, but to gather behavioral data on how those consumers interact with the site. So, for instance, it would know how long you spend on Flickr or Tumblr, or what you click on while you're there, or which ads you are interested in, or what you search for on Yahoo. All of that information could be gathered up and used by Verizon to sell even more ads, or potentially sold to marketers and third parties. So this is all part of Verizon's big play to change its business model in an era of increased convergence and online media.
When you think about, and I'm going to get into the specifics here in a moment, Brian, but when you think about how the internet has changed in the time since we've been online, I mean, we've gone from the GeoCities pages and the AOL homepage, right, to social media and more interactive, news websites, for example, that do a lot more. That's an experience change, I think, and I know there's a lot of dynamics behind it, but just the way I experience the internet has changed. Does net neutrality with these rule changes change my experience? I don't know if you catch what I'm going for here with that
question.
Yeah, so,
you know, let's start with what the rules actually say on net neutrality, mm-hmm. and then we can talk a little bit about how they're going to change. So in 2015, the Federal Communications Commission started talking about net neutrality, which is this idea about fairness on the internet, that your internet provider shouldn't be arbitrarily manipulating your internet experience to favor the companies that is allied with it or that it owns. And so in order to enshrine that principle into law, the FCC approved a series of rules that essentially allow it to ban any type of meddling by internet providers. Now, when President Trump came into office, he was allowed to appoint a new FCC chair. So now the FCC is controlled by Republicans who view the rules as being overly stifling to business. And so the FCC is currently in a process of rolling those rules back. What that means for you and me is that internet providers who may have previously been banned from blocking or slowing down websites or charging websites a fee just so that consumers can get access to those sites, would be free to do all those things again. This could have massive consequences for the internet ecosystem moving forward.
So if I have, and we're in an area that has a lot of Comcast, but just to use today's news as an example, if I get my internet from Verizon and these rule changes go through that the Trump administration is proposing, does that just mean Yahoo is always going to pop up more? You know what I mean? Like there's this Yahoo Verizon acquisition. So if these rules change and I get my internet from Verizon, does that just mean I'm inundated with Yahoo?
Potentially that could be something that happens. I mean, a good example might be, something that wireless companies, cell phone providers already do, which is to exempt certain services like Spotify or Netflix from your monthly data cap on your cell phone. So this is a practice that had raised some questions at the FCC as being potentially anti-competitive, but under the Trump administration, the FCC has said that actually, no, those practices are totally fine. And so without these rules, one thing you might potentially see is Verizon saying, okay, if you surf any Yahoo website or any Yahoo property, that data consumption is going to be exempted from your monthly data cap. Now, that's potentially good for consumers because you would be able to stretch your monthly data allotment a little bit farther. On the other hand, Verizon is so large that it can effectively eat the costs of favoring Yahoo sites, whereas a smaller website that maybe couldn't get a word in edgewise would be hurt by that practice potentially.
So there's this concept of the big companies pushing their thing, the Facebook and the Netflix getting preferential treatment over the corner hardware store or the coffee shop in your town or the feed store. How does that play out? Is that a realistic concern?
Well, I think, the internet ecosystem is always evolving. So you're always seeing new websites, new services, new features, new innovations coming online. The fear among consumer advocates is, could that innovation be threatened if internet providers such as Verizon or such as Comcast are able to effectively control what the universe of possible websites that you can easily visit online. And so if a new startup comes along, a new Netflix or a new Spotify gets invented, will the existing relationships between Spotify, Netflix, and these large internet providers make it so that you never even hear about the new startup?
So the little engine that once was Facebook, if that gets invented tomorrow, the concern is that they would never have a chance.
That's exactly right.
Brian Fung with me from The Washington Post. And we are answering your questions as well about net neutrality, the Trump administration proposing, and we'll get an update on where we are in this process, proposing to roll back these Obama-era rules on net neutrality. So what questions do you have about that and how that might affect your experience? 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can send me a tweet at WeberTom1. Paul has a comment here, I think, in New Ulm. Hi, Paul. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning. I worked as a consultant many years ago for a little company called AOL when they still had dial-up. For those older listeners.
Yes.
And even then, we knew what was coming. And I can tell you publicly now that AOL was not real wild to have to answer to the FCC because everything in those days was over telephone wires. We were even at that time beginning to discuss the concept of overriding other people's access to the Internet, which is exactly what net neutrality is trying to address now. But AOL was a monster, if you recall, and a giant, which is no more. But even back then, they were talking about superseding other people's access to the Internet. So my concern also is, like you're talking about, is these mega mergers. Is Verizon going to be able to push other people out of the way? So anyway, I just thought I'd offer my opinion from the Stone Age of Internet.
Of the Internet. Paul, thanks so much for that. Brian, I mean, Paul's comment there is that this has been brewing for a long time, but he made the important comment that the Internet once came over the phone lines, which was very much in the FCC's purview. Get into the weeds there about this concept of a utility versus a commodity and where the Internet falls.
Sure. So, you know, that point about AOL coming over your copper phone lines is really, really important here because part of the reason the FCC said it was going to implement the net neutrality rules in the first place was that, you know, more and more Internet providers are moving to a different type of connection technology known as fiber optic Internet. And, you know, the question is, what are the rules that are going to be governing these services on this technology? Can you treat Internet providers who are increasingly moving to this new technology much in the same way that, you know, the FCC used to regulate the traditional phone company? And in 2015, the FCC said yes. Now, the battle here between Democrats and Republicans over net neutrality rules hinges on this question about whether or not the FCC can treat Internet providers like legacy telephone companies. And, you know, the rule change being proposed by the current FCC would essentially roll that back. It would say, no, actually, we don't think of Internet providers like traditional telephone companies anymore. Actually, they're more like information services. So you log online. Maybe you get an email address from your Verizon account or your Verizon provider. Maybe, you know, your Internet provider gives you a little bit of cloud storage space or something like that. And because of that, your Internet provider is actually, you know, an information service provider. It's not a telecommunications service. And so even though it's very nerdy and kind of wonky, the future of net neutrality and the future of the open Internet and the future of Internet economics all have to do with this, you know, classification about what Internet providers actually are in the 21st century.
The chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, who's a former lawyer for Verizon, just on his resume, he said in a recent interview that net neutrality, that phrase, is a slogan. It's about marketing, and this issue is about government dictates. The quote here is, you don't need an FCC preemptively regulating every single internet service provider and every single business practice. Instead, the FCC's role should focus on investment and infrastructure. Parse that out for me, Brian. What's the argument there, and what's the rebuttal?
Sure. So over the next few months, you're likely to hear a lot of discussion about Internet investment. In other words, the amount of money that Internet providers pour into their networks to upgrade speeds and reliability and essentially making sure that, you know, we have the most up-to-date Internet connectivity around.
Which is a huge issue in rural parts of the country, too, where there's still not great broadband access.
Absolutely. And so this question of how much money Internet providers are spending on their networks is critical because the FCC is likely going to use that number or those sets of numbers to argue that the you know, the rules should be rolled back. Essentially, what you're going to hear from and what we have heard from the FCC is that the net neutrality rules prevented or somehow suppressed Internet providers' investment in their own networks. And, you know, the consumer advocates on the other side say, actually, that's not true. Now you've got dueling studies essentially from both sides saying different things, and they both use different methodologies, and so it's very hard to tell, you know, who exactly to trust here. But, you know, one thing is for certain, which is that there's a big debate about investment, and that's going to be a key point as the FCC tries to roll back these rules.
And so what, is there a promise that from the companies, the ISPs, that say if you roll back the rules, we promise we'll lay more broadband? I mean, is that what we're talking about?
I would say that there's not an explicit promise there, but the implication that policymakers, Republican policymakers, are making is that if you lift the rules, that will, you know, incentivize, that will generate a lot of interest in building out new networks and going after opportunities and that kind of thing. Consumer advocates say that you can't really expect that to happen, especially because, you know, in, if you look at the history of telecommunications, you've seen big investments followed by, you know, periods of relatively less investment. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything to see internet investments, slow down the pace a little bit.
Brian Fung with me from the Washington Post, technology reporter. We're going to hear from the company Kickstarter in just a moment here. There's actually a day, an event planned, a kind of protest coming up that we're going to hear about. But before we get to that, let's go to Jeff, who has a comment or a question here in Rosemont. Hi, Jeff. Go right ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Go, your question.
I'll try to make this as clear as I can. I'm not quite sure how to word this, but this almost feels like double dipping to me. And I'll use Netflix as an example. So I pay for Netflix, and that takes bandwidth, and I want that to my house. And maybe there are three people who want to watch it, so I will pay my internet provider more money to get that bandwidth to my house. Now they're going to turn around and charge Netflix, who is the reason that I pay more for the bandwidth in the first place.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, I would not be paying this much for internet without these content providers creating the need for more bandwidth.
So
you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Brian, did you pick that up? I mean, he sees a lot of he sees a potential double dipping there going on. What would you say to that?
That's exactly, you know, the right way to think about it. You know, the economists call this a two-sided market. So you have an internet provider who's charging the end customer, that's you know, people like you and me, to get on the internet, and then you have the internet provider turning around and saying to the, you know, people who provide the websites, saying those people should also pay as well. So the question here is that a good thing? Is that good for investment? Is that good for innovation? What happens, I think one sort of question that leads to is what happens when that world comes about? Do you have websites then passing along those costs to consumers? Does Netflix, for example, charge you more, charge the viewer more because it's being charged by the internet provider as well?
So then Jeff, then in addition to paying more for broadband, will then pay more just for that Netflix subscription as well?
That's the question, yeah.
That is a big question. The chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, has said he thinks net neutrality's days are numbered. My understanding is that it's in process. Where are we? Are these rules on their way out?
Well, right now the FCC is soliciting public feedback on its proposal. It's partway through that process, which should take a few weeks. Once that process is completed, the FCC will take all that public feedback, go behind closed doors, and craft a finalized version of its proposal, which will then also require a vote by the full commission. So, there's still a lot to go here, but it is important to point out that, the Republicans currently outnumber Democrats 2-1 on the commission. So that means that they can push through virtually any proposal that that they prefer. And a lot of people think that, you know, the downfall of the FCC's rules is pretty much inevitable, which will then be followed by, legal action, a court challenge by the supporters of the rules.
I'm going to play a little piece of audio. This is from John Oliver, who hosts the HBO show Last Week Tonight. He's a comedian, and this has been one of his cause celebs.
The FCC site did get a ton of comments. The number is now up to around 1.6 million. And those comments have come from all quarters of the political spectrum.
John Oliver, Brian Fung is telling people to go to the website gofccyourself.com because it's an easy portal to the place where you make those comments that you just said. And like he did a few years ago when this was on the burner there, they've gotten a lot of comments. Is there a John Oliver effect or a kind of comedian in mainstream media effect to this debate?
Well, it's really hard to determine the actual impact of John Oliver's exhortations, mainly because, shortly after he issued that call for comments, the FCC's website actually crashed. And a lot of people might think, well, okay, maybe one thing led to the other. But in fact, the FCC says that it was a deliberate denial of service attack that prevented people from submitting comments, not, you know, the FCC's website crashing under the load of lots of people trying to submit comments. Now, there's some debate as to whether or not that's actually accurate or but there has been a lot of attention being focused on the FCC's comment system, which has been flooded with, both actual comments from regular people as well as automated comments submitted by robots and fake comments submitted in the name of other people who say that, you know, they made no such representation to the FCC. And so, you know, it's not really clear how useful ultimately at the end of the day these comments will be to the FCC other than, you know, showing the strength or the intensity of the interest surrounding the issue.
It will be interesting if people go online on July 12th to see if anything's different. We're hearing that companies including Amazon, Kickstarter, Reddit, and Mozilla are going to have an online protest about deregulation here. And I'm joined by Mia Call Rosen, who's general counsel for Kickstarter. Thanks so much for your time. I know you've been waiting here on the phone, and I know you've heard the conversation. But what's the plan here? What's the idea here to do on July 12th?
Sure, and thanks for having me. Our plan for July 12th is to have an internet-wide day of action and really take the day to bring attention to this important issue. Similar to what we did in 2015 before the current open internet rules were passed. Mm-hmm. And if you or your listeners remember in 2012, there were similar protests around SOPA PIPA, which were bills that were being proposed in Congress that would stifle speech on the internet. And so this is another instance of internet companies kind of coming together mm-hmm. and saying, we want to bring attention to this issue. We want to save net neutrality, make sure that the open internet rules aren't eliminated. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've seen the power of these kinds of actions. In SOPA PIPA, the bill was scrapped because so many people spoke out. And in 2015, a lot of companies like ourselves drew attention to the net neutrality issue and directed people to file comments with the FCC to reach out to their legislators. And, last time around, there were almost 4 million comments filed with the FCC in support of net neutrality, and that helped to get the rules in place.
So
we're seeming to replicate that.
Just to clarify, your company, Kickstarter, wants to keep the current rules in place. You don't want this repeal, I guess you'd call it, to take effect. Is that right?
That's right. And we worked very hard in 2015 along with a lot of other companies to get these rules in place.
As a private company, one of the comments we've heard from the FCC chairman is that, and actually other Republican supporters of getting rid of these rules, is that net neutrality is a great slogan, but this is about the question of whether you want the government deciding how the internet is run. As a private company, do you want the government deciding how the internet is run, or do you want to be completely freed of all of those rules?
I think as a company and as a platform that represents much smaller creators and artists and companies out there, what we want is to make sure that it is not the big four telecom companies, the big four internet providers, who are determining what we all see on the internet and what kind of internet we can get. So we know in history, given what the courts have said, that the government needs to put these regulations in place to make sure that it's not those big corporations picking the winners and losers.
Of course, you have a financial concern too, right? I mean, I presume a concern for a company like Kickstarter is that if these rules are removed, then an internet service provider like a Verizon or a Comcast could then come to Kickstarter and say, pay up if you want to be in the fast lane, if you want to get to people's internet browsers faster. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an interest as a company to make sure that, you know, that we succeed on the basis of the product that we offer, that the videos on our site, people can access them without lagging or without buffering, that we're not in a position where our videos or our content is slowed down because our competitor can pay more. But I think more importantly, you know, we've been around for a few years. We have probably more money than some smaller companies, mm-hmm. and we may be able to afford that. But you know, the smaller individuals, entrepreneurs, the creators that use sites like ours, they're really not in that position. And so it's those people that stand to lose the most if these rules are taken away.
But you could have an advantage against competition from other websites that do what you do, right? I mean, that could be an advantage for you.
Absolutely, but I think that's an advantage that as a business we're not interested in having. We want to build the best product out there. We want to really appeal to our community of users and say, come use our site because we are the best place to find great projects and to create your projects. So we don't want to sort of cheat our way into dominance.
Brian Fung, you've reported about this day of protest on July 12th. Give me a sense, in addition to companies like Kickstarter, where are businesses coming down? I mean, my sense is maybe these four ISPs have one view and, I don't know, the rest of the internet has another, but maybe that's not the case. What are we seeing, Brian?
Well, largely you're seeing, you know, independent websites and you know, online service providers coming down in favor of the SEC's rules. You're seeing telecom operators, cable companies, and you know, other connectivity companies coming down against the rules. You know, generally, it's been described as kind of a tech industry versus telecom kind of battle. But we've also seen some, you know, pretty high profile companies such as Netflix, who were very active in this debate last time around when the rules were being proposed and passed, now saying, you know, this is actually not as big of an issue for us anymore. You know, you see companies like Google and Facebook; those guys are mainly on the sidelines or speaking through their large their trade groups and lobbyists in Washington, as opposed to speaking out individually. The only major, you know, website that, you know, sort of is a major titan in this space and being involved in the July 12th protest is Amazon, which obviously made a lot of headlines when that was first reported. But aside from that, you see none of the other major five tech companies like Apple or Google or Facebook weighing in directly on this.
And Maya Cullen, in our final seconds here, is the idea here that on July 12th, people should stay off the internet as a protest, or is it just a matter of on the front page of Kickstarter, there's going to be a little message for me to read or something like that?
No, it's definitely not staying off the internet. It's basically bringing this issue to people's attention and directing them to file comments with the FCC or to reach out to their legislators and kind of make their voice heard, make sure that people in Washington understand that this isn't a partisan issue, that, you know, this is supporting the small guys. It's very much a sort of free market capitalist idea to preserve competition and to preserve speech on the internet.
Maya Call Rosen, general counsel for Kickstarter, part of this event on July 12th that's coming up related to net neutrality. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Brian Fung, technology reporter for The Washington Post. I always appreciate your insight. Come back soon and we'll talk about this some more. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial? Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.